It's Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, none other than Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. I was about to say eponymously called Harvell and Collins Law Offices, but we'll just leave it at Harvell and Collins. And we've got Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins joining us. And good afternoon to you, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
Afternoon.
So
we're glad to be here, Lockwood. We are thankful. Wes has been out and about. I saw the article in the newspaper, by the way, Wes, you and me pass in the night some days, right, about you and your sporting as a high school kid and home with the his two wonderful kids, Tyler and Kaysen, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful broadcast, Lockwood. So Wes has been busy in the athletic world with his two children. I went on a short trip, but we're back again, Lockwood, with you this afternoon, and that's a good thing.
Well, thank you very much. And it with all the travel, and I'm confident that this has been a challenge as well. You've got all of your clients you're working with, and we've talked about this on numerous occasions, how you've got an entire staff that's working as well. So I think that's impressive. I think that's an important aspect of this, that you've it's not just the two of you, but an entire office and of highly trained professionals, and you rely on them. We've talked about that on numerous occasions.
Yeah. Well, there's just no question about that. We are so fortunate to have good lawyers that back Wes up, good lawyers that back me up. I have two or three. Wes has two or three. I think we each have three, actually. Mm-hmm. And then we have, of course, legal assistants from there. Legal assistants, it's an interesting thing to even talk about, are sometimes called paralegals. They're sometimes called legal assistants. But they are very knowledgeable and very very, very helpful with clients. Sometimes the lawyers are in meetings or conferences, but the legal assistants are able to answer questions. So it is a team approach. There's no question about it. It is absolutely a team approach.
So the topic today, what is on the issue?
We're going to talk about, Wes is going to lead us today mostly, but let's talk about, Lockwood, appeals. Right out of the gate, what does that even mean? Well, obviously, there's been a determination by the clerk of court, by the district court, by the superior court, by the federal district court. There's been a decision, sometimes even an administrative order. And as one knows or should know, there is always the right to an appeal. But appellate work is a genre into itself, and that's what we want to talk about today. Some of the rules, regulations, time limits, the procedures, the protocol with regard to our good clients who are, for whatever reason, feel that they should have an appeal. So with that introduction, Wes, you guide us through a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're proceeding forward with a case, you want things to go the way you want them to go.
Right.
You want to win everything,
mm-hmm.
But you don't win everything every time. Sometimes the court doesn't agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get to pick your client. Sometimes you're on the side of the case that is maybe not the strongest, legally.
Right.
And, you advise your client with regard to that. And you have to know how to navigate the appeal process, I think, to be an effective litigator. Because if you don't appeal bad decisions, decisions, period, then I think that other lawyers that you're dealing with and practicing around kind of know that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be willing to do that. You have to be willing to go through that process. It's a tedious process, and it can be complicated. So that's just part of litigation. I don't really think that, okay, well, I'm a litigator, but I'm only going to stop at the trial level and do nothing else.
Right.
That's probably not doing your, providing the best service to your client. So first thing we kind of need to understand with regard to the appeals process, you know, here in North Carolina is, you know, what are the different courts and mm-hmm. where do appeals go? And so basically how that works is that, you know, you have the district court, and the district court is kind of, I'm talking about civil, by the way. Right. This is all civil. I'm not talking about criminal. You know, kind of lower level cases.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in the trial court, above that, you have the superior court. That's the highest level of civil cases in state court. And so if you have a determination in a district court, this could be a family law case. It could be a case over money. It could be any kind of case in district court. Then that appeal goes to the North Carolina Court of Appeals in Raleigh. Okay, so that's where that goes. In superior court, if you have a determination that needs to be appealed, then that goes also to the North Carolina Court of Appeals in Raleigh. Okay, and so then the court above the North Carolina Court of Appeals is the North Carolina Supreme Court. And so the Supreme Court sits in a position where it does many things, but one of the primary things it does, especially in line with this particular radio program we're talking about this morning, is it does potentially review appeals and decisions from the North Carolina Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say potentially, that means it reviews cases that it chooses to review. It does not review every opinion from the Court of Appeals. There's a process where once you have an opinion from the Court of Appeals, you can ask for a review, a petition for discretionary review for the Supreme Court to review that opinion and to potentially reverse the Court of Appeals. They could uphold the decision of the Court of Appeals. It could remand it back to the trial court for further proceedings on something. So there's multiple things that can happen there, but that's kind of the progression with regard to state civil court, district court to Court of Appeals, then the Supreme Court, superior court to Court of Appeals, then Supreme Court. And so that's that progression. I'll talk in a minute about, you know, kind of the timeline and the process for these appeals. But I'll mention this right now. The timing with regard to an appeal is not quick.
Hmm.
And it's probably 18 months average.
Wow.
You know, maybe the Court of Appeals would say it's a little bit less, but in my experience, it's normally about an 18-month period of time from the notice of appeal until a final decision. They have a lot of cases to deal with. That they want to be, I think, accurate more than fast. Now, there are particular situations where the courts can consider things quickly, but there has to be, you know, a reason why it needs to be considered quickly, you know, and there would have to be a particular application for the court of appeals to consider things quickly. But the normal progression of an appeal is going to be, you know, 18 months, something like that. So then we look at the kind of lower level courts, not really lower level, that's probably not accurate. The courts with particular jurisdiction, exclusive jurisdiction, like estate matters. Mm-hmm. As we know, as we've talked about on the program, the clerk of court has specific jurisdiction for an exclusive jurisdiction for certain items,
mm-hmm.
such as you know, we don't really have in North Carolina, like they have in a lot of other states, a probate court. What we have is the clerk of court that serves in that position. And the clerk of court is kind of like the first line of determination when we're dealing with the state issues, unless it's a complex or somewhat complex matter, or there's a dispute or equitable relief is being sought, or there's a dispute regarding the facts that are complicated, then the clerk has the authority to transfer the case up to Superior Court. And then we're on that appeal track from Superior Court up to the Court of Appeals, like I talked about. But if the clerk of court makes a decision in a state-related case, it could be a guardianship, it could be a petition to revoke letters, testamentary, it could be an elective share matter, as we've talked about on the program, then once that order is entered and that decision is made, then the appeal goes up to the Superior Court. And so there's different standards with regard to that. I'll touch on here in a moment, but those are state-related matters. And let's say it's non-estate-related matters, like a petition to partition, foreclosure matter, something right. like that, mm-hmm. then an appeal from the clerk's order on those matters go to Superior Court as well. But we have two different standards there. If we're talking about an estate matter, in most cases, that's going to be a review of the record that the clerk considered.
Right.
And an abuse of discretion. So the Superior Court is not sitting like a brand new trial court. They're sitting as a court like, okay, my job under a statute 1-301.3, that's the state statute, is to do what? And the statute says what the Superior Court has to do, and what they have to do is they have to, and I'm kind of boiling this down though, they have to review the record and make a decision about whether the clerk abused
right.
his or her discretion. Mm-hmm. We're not starting all over.
Right.
Okay, but if we're in a non-estate-related matter, then it's a new appeal. It's what we call de novo.
Mm-hmm.
That means the clerk made a decision. We're appealing from it. We're in the Superior Court. Okay. Push the restart button before the Superior Court judge. And the Superior Court judge then considers the evidence that's presented before that Superior Court judge. So it's a little, you have to know your standard. You can't just show up and say, I'm appealing and mm-hmm. and look at this and tell me what you think. No, the statute is the law with regard to all of that and supplies the law. And so the Superior Court is limited to what the statute allows it to do. And so we've got kind of the two different levels there of appeal. So we're talking about district court and superior court. An appeal from that court, it's a 30-day notice of appeal. You have to file your notice of appeal within 30 days. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you're out of court. You've lost your right. Before the clerk, it's a 10-day as I just described, it's a 10-day notice of appeal, so it's a quicker time period. So you've got to know those. If you miss those dates, then you're out of court. Also, when you appeal from estate matters, you can't just file a document that says notice of appeal. If you have to state in your notice of appeal that indicates specifically what you're appealing on. You have to kind of attack the order of the clerk. You know, I appeal from finding of fact number 3
mm-hmm.
and finding of fact number 17 and finding of fact number 25. So if you don't do that, that's called a broadside attack, and your appeal will likely be dismissed because you have to be specific with regard to what you're appealing. So as you can tell, I mean, this might be the driest radio program we'll ever have because it's very academic, and there's a lot of there's a lot of nooks and crannies. There's a lot of pitfalls. There's a lot of detail involved in knowing how to deal with this process. But
I think, Wes, one very interesting kind of juicy, if you will, concept is the de novo appeal. Tell us about that. I, of course, in my state practice, Wes mentioned a moment ago, Lockwood, as you know, it's come up before that in the state of North Carolina, estate matters, guardianship matters, anything having to do with our wonderful elder population are all handled exclusively. Exclusive jurisdiction begins with our clerk of court.
Right.
And that's why our election for a clerk of court is very, very important. You, of course, Lockwood, and I, and Wes, have known the clerks of court here in our county for decades now. We've been so fortunate with so many really great ones. Currently, right now, we have Ken Raper, as we know. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is that jurisdiction begins at the clerk level. And so the clerk makes a decision, enters an order. An order is a very important thing. And then there is this concept that Wes will tell us about right now that uses the uses the words de novo. What is that, Wes?
Right. It's starting anew is basically what it is. And, you know, there are certain areas where when you have an appeal, it's as though the original hearing or trial or whatever it was that took place, that once you appeal from that, and the order that came from that, it's like it never took place at all. It's de novo. We start over. It's not like you're having to show that there was error at the lower court. No, you just have the right to start over. Now, one of the probably most notable areas where that is allowed is in, not only allowed, well, this is the standard, is in small claims court.
Mm-hmm.
Because we understand, you know, $10,000 or less, you know, a lot of times you're talking about summary ejectment, like eviction proceedings, those type things are heard before a magistrate. And so there is a 10-day appeal period before a magistrate, because you understand, you know, there's no right to a jury in magistrate court. You know, the judges don't have to be, you know, attorneys. They're magistrates that are certainly trained, but many of them are not attorneys. And so it is a quicker justice type thing. But the way our system is set up is that if you don't like what happened in the magistrate court, you have a right to a de novo trial at the district court upon your filing of your 10-day notice of appeal. So, you know, you kind of get a do-over. Now, there's some moving parts with regard to that in certain areas, like if you're appealing from a summary ejectment, like an eviction, then in order to have a proper appeal, you may have to post a bond and pay rent during that period of time, but you still have that right to file that notice of appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And that review of that is like what Cecil was referring to, is de novo. You start over brand new before the district court, and you even have a right to, under most circumstances, request a jury in the district court. So it's not, you know, so you get that constitutional right back once you appeal,
mm-hmm.
You know, to have a jury. So, you know, other issues, probably nobody listening understands this issue I'm going to talk about, because it doesn't make a lot of sense until you explain it. Interlocutory appeals, that's kind of a big word.
Hmm.
But you understand that when, Lockwood, you're going through a case, it's not as though there's only one thing to appeal from, and that's the final judgment, like once you try the case. You understand that while your case is progressing, the court may enter an order on a motion to compel evidence,
uh-huh,
or a protective order. That's an evidentiary type thing. or a dismissed part of the case based on a summary judgment or on a motion to dismiss under a 12B or 12C. These are all rules of civil procedure I'm stating. So there's multiple things that you can appeal from as a case is going forward. Mm-hmm. But you don't have the right in most cases to appeal from any of those items until the case is over, until you have a final order. So you could have, let's say that you have, we talk about will caveats a lot, so let's say you have a will caveat case is going forward and you're challenging the will based on lack of testamentary capacity and undue influence. Lack of testamentary capacity would be, well, I don't think the person had the capacity to enter a will, and look at what all these witnesses say, look at what the doctors say, look at what the medical records say, that kind of thing. Other standard is undue influence. Well, look at the influence that this, you know, child put on the mother, you know, kept us all away from her, you know, printed off the document from the internet, put it in front of her, you know, made her sign it, neighbor, you know, heard her being abusive to the mom, telling her if she doesn't do things that she's not going to feed her, you know, things like that. Well, let's say that the court dismissed one of those two. Let's say the court on a motion for summary judgment dismissed the undue influence part of it. Mm-hmm. Well, then you go try the case, and let's say that the jury comes back and says doesn't agree with you on the lack of capacity. Well, okay, you lose the case, but you got maybe a couple things to appeal from there. One would be, you know, maybe evidentiary issues at the trial, but there's no way to know whether the court would have, or the jury would have agreed with you on the undue influence part of the case because the court dismissed it before you ever got there.
Right.
Right.
So what is your process? Your process is once we reach a final judgment, a final verdict, the final determination in the case, then you can appeal that. If you try to appeal it earlier, then it'll most likely be dismissed as an interlocutory appeal. And the reason that you can't dismiss these important rulings, like, you know, kind of gutting half of your case before you ever get to trial, and, you know, that doesn't make sense because now if I went on appeal, we have to retry the whole thing. It's very inefficient. Well, the reason that the court doesn't allow these interlocutory appeals is because we don't want cases to go back and forth to the Court of Appeals. Because then we would have multiple appeals through the progression of a case, or we could have multiple appeals through the progression of a case that would really slow it down. It'd be hard to ever get to your trial. So most issues that you want to appeal from when you're talking about a district court order or you're talking about a superior court order or a final judgment, either one of those, are items that you cannot appeal from until the case is complete, meaning there are no further issues to be considered. And then you have to file your notice of appeal within 30 days, and then go through the progression. Now, if you're before the clerk of court, or you're in the, if you're before the clerk of court, and there's a ruling like that, like part of the case gets dismissed, you don't have to wait until everything is done before the superior court in order to file a notice of appeal. You can file your notice of appeal that to superior court right away, and you have to. If you don't file it timely, you're going to lose your right to appeal. So you got to understand the time frame. You understand when you can appeal, what court you're appealing to, what the notice of appeal has to include, what the issues you can appeal from. And, you know, kind of very broadly stated, an appeal is not a, well, I think the jury got it wrong. I want the Court of Appeals to review it. That's not the way an appeal works. It is almost never going to happen that a Court of Appeals is going to reverse a decision the jury made on a factual issue. That's not the purpose of an appeal. The purpose of an appeal is if there are errors of law that we're dealing with, like let's say that certain evidence you contend should have been given to that jury, and the court didn't give it to the jury. And so your argument is if the jury had that evidence, which the court excluded, then their decision would have been different. So that's a good example of the kind of things that you're appealing from. Or certain evidence was given to the jury that was prejudicial that should not have been given to the jury. I mean, that's an evidentiary type of issue. The court, granted something with regard to a dismissal. I mean, that's another thing that would be very likely to be appealed from if there was something dismissed that you argue shouldn't have been dismissed. So it's not I get an automatic do-over because I don't like the way the jury came back. I mean, the jury's the finder of fact. And the jury, the Court of Appeals is not going to look at a jury's decision and say, well, I don't really agree with the way they, saw that, so we're just going to change it. That's not the way it works. You have to find an error, basically.
Wes, this is the interesting aspect of this, and I've got several questions for you real quickly. Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins with us, and Cecil's also involved in this conversation, and he pointed out the issue of de novo. Wes, several questions for you related to timing. Number one, the issue of, in the case, let me see, I've got to go back and look at my notes. And I'm taking notes so that I can prepare for my bar exam. But,
your bar exam, right?
Right. But in the case of an estate matter, it's a 10-day notice. In a non-estate matter, it's a 30-day notice of appeal. My question to you...
No. If it's before the clerk 10 days on both.
Okay.
That's right.
Oh.
It's 10 and 10, but basically everything else is 30.
30.
Magistrate, clerk, 10 days, everything else is 30.
All right. If you miss that window, is it conceivable to be able to take it and enter into an appeal process, or does the steel door come down and that's it?
It's pretty much a steel door unless there are some extenuating circumstances where you can file a motion for retroactive extension of time.
Okay.
But there'd have to be something pretty
significant,
like, okay, it could be like, okay, the appeal period is going to start to run from the date of service of the order that you're appealing from. And let's say that there's a conflict as to when you were actually served.
Right.
You have to have something technical there, not just, I was not feeling well that day.
Right.
That's probably not going to help you.
Well, I just remember a particular case in which you were successful in extending that appeal process, but it was simply because a failure to deliver, as I recall. And that goes back a long way with several conversations we had a while back. But, the other question related to the timing, 18 months of the appeal process, and I'm wondering, and I want to get into this in regards to your capacity as a litigator, does this oftentimes lend itself to the possibility of some sort of a settlement? And now this, of course, does not always involve competing parties, but I'm wondering, is there a potential that in the case of an appeal process that maybe two opposing parties say, okay, the process is going to take a while, let's see if we can settle this before we get into the appeals process. Does that ever happen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm wrapping up a case right now that we won at trial.
Mm-hmm.
The other side filed a notice of appeal, but the other side immediately reached out to me and made a monetary offer.
Right.
And so my duty is to communicate to my client, do you want to do this or not? Client did not want to do that. Well, one of the reasons that he didn't want to do that in that case is because we were awarded attorney's fees in that case.
Mm-hmm.
And there is law that is directly on point that if you're awarded attorney's fees in the underlying case, you have the right to apply to the court for additional attorney's fees defending your judgment.
Right.
So he knew that even though we're going through this appeal, this is going to, even though we're going through this appeal, that we have the right to apply to get his attorney's fees right. back at the end of it, which we just had a hearing on that like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So they wanted to settle, but we wouldn't settle on the case because of that. Now, if we didn't have the right to get those attorney's fees, there would be quite a more significant
motivation
to right. get the yeah. thing settled.
The other aspect of this, and this goes to the your category as a litigator, and let's say entering into a lawsuit. I'm thinking then, and to your point a few moments ago, that the appeal is really a challenge of actions of the court, not of the jury, but decisions by the court, which of course is you're challenging the home base here.
Yeah.
As a litigator, you probably in the process of setting up your schedule of questions and also evidence, you're probably thinking in advance you want to avoid a situation of having to go into an appeal or opening the door to a possible appeal process. Am I thinking correctly in that?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes Lockwood, I'm thinking, okay, man, I'd really like to get this evidence before the jury. I think it'd be really helpful, but I'm not really sure mm-hmm. if I'm not sure if it really should be admissible. I really don't want to create an issue on appeal here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you even take the low road on that and you say, I'm just not going to put that evidence on because I don't think I need it. And if I do and the court goes with me, this could really get messy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want it to be messy for my client. So there's a lot of strategy involved in that. It's not as though you just blindly try to do everything you can possibly do, even though part of what you're doing may be, on the edge.
Right, right.
I mean, I might be able to convince the judge to do something that the Court of Appeals doesn't agree with, mm-hmm. and then I've got an appeal I've got to deal with for
right.
months.
Yeah.
And let me make sure I'm clear on that 18 months. The 18 months is kind of an estimate. Appeals to
right.
the Court of Appeals, to the Court of Appeals.
Oh.
But if you're appealing from the magistrate court to the district court, you're talking about a month or so
mm-hmm.
Before you get to your hearing. If you're appealing from the clerk of court to the superior court, then you're talking about, a month or so as well, maybe 2 months, depends on how quickly you can get it before the court. So that 18 months is not every appeal. That's what the time period is when you get up to the Court of Appeals, because it's not just notice of appeal and then they consider it. No, there are all these timelines you have to abide by. There's the notice of appeal has to be timely. You have to then enter it within 14 days, a contract with the court reporter. You have to file that to show that you're getting the transcript.
Uh-huh.
Once you get the transcript, you have to prepare the record on appeal.
Hmm.
And it has to be very specific. It's a real headache, but it has to be very specific. You have to file that within a timely manner. If you don't do that, you can get appealed. Then once that finally gets settled, then you're in a process of, a period of time where you have to brief your case to the Court of Appeals. And then the other side has the right to file their responsive brief. And then there can be reply briefs. So there's a briefing period that goes back and forth, maybe two times or three times. And then it's submitted to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals decides, are we going to hear oral argument on this case, which is only 10% of the cases, or are we going to consider this, based on the briefing only and not invite folks up here to Raleigh to have an oral argument? And I've done it both ways. And so you got to understand that there's a process here that we go through. It's not just, send it to the Court of Appeals and they'll decide it. No, there is multiple deadlines and multiple processes that we go through in order to get to you know, a final opinion and decision from the Court of Appeals. So that's what's going on during those 18 months.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, and that was Wes Collins, and we're talking with them related to the issue of appeals. And Cecil, I agree with you on this comment you said at the opening of the program, and that was that the appeals process is in itself and almost a specialty. I can appreciate that, Wes. I can also appreciate the fact that as you are involved in a litigation, particularly if you're the initiator of the litigation, how much work you're doing in advance just to avoid having to do those. You said earlier a kind of a dry issue. Well, yeah, but it's very obviously a very detailed issue as well. And
right,
it's almost as if I would say we should have started the end at the beginning to explain why this, what you were explaining throughout the process, how involved it is. Wes, I appreciate this very much. Cecil, as always, thank you for your time this afternoon here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And again, I'm looking forward to next week as well. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Lockwood.